Hey guys, thanks for tuning into this one. We're still working through a backlog of audio, and so this episode is a little bit dated, but I think you'll find it is another one of those fun time capsules. You'll hear some thoughts on the Southern Baptist Convention annual meeting that continue to be relevant, along with some other goodies. Thanks again for listening, and we hope to be back next week with James Wan's Malignant, plus some pretty cool stuff we've got lined up. Talk to you soon.
Hey, 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 Pop Culture Coram Deo. This is your host, Jeff Wright, and I'm here with Dr. Jared Moore, getting ready to talk to you about what has become, I think, my favorite film franchise, Jared.
Mm-hmm.
But before we get started on that, how are you doing, man?
I'm doing well, man. It's been a good summer so far. Just busy.
Yeah. Yeah, we've had a busy one, too. I can't say it's been good, though. We both went to the recent Southern Baptist Convention annual meeting.
Oh, yeah.
And I feel like it was a flaming tire fire in a dumpster covered with old diapers. And that's been the low light of the summer so far.
Well, I wouldn't say that. But
the one good part of the SBC, other than hanging out with the people I got to hang out with, was you on the mic as a former second vice president of the Southern Baptist Convention, rocking a Batman shirt and a Titans ball cap, fixing a resolution on human sexuality.
Yeah, that was surprising that they accepted it so quickly. I was glad they did. It was, I think it was needed. But
one of our mutual friends said, "You're the true and greater Calvinist Batman," and I appreciate you picking up that mantle.
Yeah, amen. Because he went woke, didn't he?
He went super woke. Yeah.
Yeah, I need to create a Twitter handle with the true Calvinist Batman or something like that.
That'd be really funny.
I don't think he might be more Calvinistic than I am, though.
Keep talking. I'm registering the Twitter handle.
Yeah, for real.
All right, man. Well, let's kind of catch up here. So let's get into
what you watching? What you watching? What you watching?
And Jared, what you been watching?
We watched Loki, the first two episodes. And there's a, have you heard about the gender fluidity in that?
Yeah, that's the thing that kept me from watching it.
Well, so my youth guy said there was nothing in the first episode, so we watched the first episode. Well, after we watched the first episode, we were like, you know, there ain't nothing in this yet. I thought it might be subtle. So in the second one, it's like overtly, and so we're not going to watch it anymore. Like, I wouldn't recommend watching it just because of the, it's brilliant how they've done it.
Yeah.
I mean, it's brilliant how they've done it. It makes you think, and so I'm aggravated about it. Because it says your identity has nothing to do with your gender. And yet, biblically, whatever gender you are, you're that for eternity.
It's inherent to who you are.
Yes.
It's inherent to your identity.
You cannot change it.
Yeah, kind of drawing on Carl Truman's Rise of the Modern Self. We're the most isolated generation in the sense that we would treat that as a credible idea, that somehow your identity could be separated from your gender.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you ask even probably your dad and my dad, and unless they were, you know, watching the news regularly, they would think that's the dumbest idea in the world,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yep.
Yeah, I'm out on Disney Plus, so Winter Soldier and Falcon broke me.
Yeah,
it was so woke that I realized they're going to use their storytelling brilliance to reprogram their viewers. And so I may do a forensic thing on Loki at some point, but Disney is not getting any more of my money. That subscription-based model is the most steady revenue stream they have, right? They they can count every month they're getting their revenue. They're getting the revenue from those subscriptions. And I know my little, whatever it is, $11.99 or whatever is a drop in the bucket, but I just can't in good conscience feed that beast anymore. Mm-hmm. And so when I really like, Tom Hiddleston, is that the actor in Loki?
I think so.
I really enjoy his stuff, and I enjoy his Loki like most people in the world. But when I read about the gender fluidity, I just realized, no, I'm not going to support this. I'm not going to put eyes on this. I'm certainly not going to pay them a monthly fee that allows them to have a steady revenue stream to write more of this and propagandize more people.
Yeah, it's overt in your face in episode two, and I assume it's just that way the rest of the series. There's only six episodes.
Yeah.
So it's frustrating because they could have easily not had that.
Yeah.
Other shows have done similar things and it not been that way.
Yeah.
Like
Loki was a lady in the comics for a while. You know, before even they had Thor become a woman. I think with Thor, they continued referring to Lady Thor or whatever. I can't remember what their name was. They just called that person Thor. But I think they still referred to Lady Thor as Son of Odin. I mean, that's the thing with the comic books on Marvel. They've kind of run through all the comic books I read before they went crazy. And now they're into full-blown craziness. You know, you probably saw that they turned the Captain America villain Red Skull into Jordan Peterson.
What?
Yeah, yeah. So the Red Skull, because Ta-Nehisi Coates is writing the Captain America main title now. And so Jordan Peterson is the Red Skull. You know, Jordan Peterson is the face of Nazism in,
oh my goodness,
in Marvel. And I just realized that they're not writing comics for people who want stories. And those comics are going to be the feeder material for, you know, the next waves. And I just don't want anything to do with it. I think the Marvel Cinematic Universe Phase 1, I'm going to treat as a complete and final, you know, corpus. And I'm just done with them from here.
That's awful.
It is awful. It is awful. I'm writing notes for a piece coming up that I'm going to publish on our website called Your Family Needs a Media Exit Strategy, or a Big Media Exit Strategy. Mm-hmm. And really, Marvel's the main one. We need a strategy to cut off. Well, I say Marvel, Disney. We need a strategy to cut off from these characters we've loved for so long, right? Not just Marvel, but Star Wars. They own the big properties. They're going to use them for nefarious ends. I have, you know, reliable information that they're going to use Avatar the Airbender, just all the stuff they've been glomming up over the years. Mm-hmm. It's all going hardcore woke, hardcore LGBTQ, hardcore cultural revolution, you know, in the coming year. And mm-hmm. so all this is going to be coming. And thoughtful Christians just don't need to be paying for that stuff. So how do you get your family back to enjoying good stories that aren't propaganda for those who hate you? Hopefully I'll get that piece together and give some recommendation to our listeners. Mm-hmm. I've been thinking about it for a while and trying to practice some stuff in our own home, and maybe I can be a help.
That'll be good, man. Get a list of that together.
Yeah.
Resources. And I mean, there's more and more, you know, Christians are getting more and more, like with Realm Makers writing Christian fiction, sci-fi, fantasy.
Yep.
And by Christian, I mean that loosely, but just good, wholesome stories where there's a clear good and a clear evil.
Yeah. And it's not calling evil good and good evil, which right. is what's happening with all the legacy content creators now.
Yeah.
Yeah. And honestly, that's part of the, you know, I don't want to take us down that rabbit trail too much, but I think one of the main things families are going to have to commit to and work really hard to do, because it feels awkward at first based on what we've been doing at my house, but we're going to have to ramp up storytelling. You know, the evenings around the fireplace or the dinner table isn't going to be like wrapped up by going to watch the next season of Mandalorian. As much as I hate to say that, I love Mandalorian, but it's going to be wrapped up by going to read either, you know, the late, you know, the next Chronicle of Narnia, or your Realm Maker purchase, mm-hmm. or Lord willing, stories that your family composes to tell one another. Mm-hmm. And that's part of what I think the future holds for us. I mean, it's weird. I mean, this podcast has been built around reviewing movies. I think those are going to be increasingly rare and further in between. Mm-hmm. And you think, well, someday Christians will make movies. Okay, maybe. Maybe they will. I think that, you know, the Kendrick brothers and some of those people have tried to show beginning steps on how to do that. But we're going to need a lot in terms of skill, financing, right, to get there. And I don't think I'll ever be able at this stage of my life to develop video editing skills or the kind of stuff you would need, like to finance a movie that would be Hollywood level in terms of production value. But maybe I can help create a whole bunch of storytellers who are used to telling stories, thinking about telling stories, and maybe it can be the fodder. You know, I don't know that I'll have a hand in the next great, you know, Chariots of Fire, but maybe some of the people I have influence on can churn up the kind of stories that will become not just Chariots of Fire, but the next Beowulf or the next Dante's Inferno or the next whatever, mm-hmm. you know?
Yeah.
I think we have to start thinking about ourselves as somebody's ancestor and starting a culture and cultivating a culture of storytelling in our homes is a pretty good way to do that.
Amen.
Yeah.
Homes, schools.
Churches.
Yep. Churches.
Yep.
Yeah, all of it.
Yeah.
What have you been watching besides, well, I've been watching Loki. at least two episodes.
Yeah.
What you've been watching?
We have been watching a couple different things that are way outside the mainstream. There's not a lot of narrative fiction on right now that I have much interest in. I may have mentioned this the last time we recorded, but a friend of mine who's thoughtful recommended the CW show, at least season one, around Superman. I can't remember if this is Lois and Clark or whatever.
I think it's Superman and Lois, maybe.
Okay.
Something like that.
Something like that. He said that season one, anyway, wasn't too bad in terms of like critical ideology and pushing sexual revolution stuff. So I'll probably take a look at that. But for right now, my family's been pushing pretty hard to do just what I've been talking about. And one of the things that we have been watching is we bought the Motor Trend television app. My son likes car stuff, and my younger son is going to follow right after what my older son and I do. So we've been watching the new Top Gear, the new American Top Gear on there.
Hmm.
And then we have been watching a series of documentaries on there called Autobiography that are pretty well done.
Hmm.
The other thing we've been watching, we really have the TV cut off, but we've been watching the University of Tennessee baseball team. We've put a lot of distance between ourselves and some of the sports leagues because they're doing the same kind of propagandizing. And so we've been watching Tennessee baseball and having a good time with that.
How'd they do?
They have made it to the College World Series as of this recording. They lost their first game, and so they'll play one more game tomorrow. They lose that, they're out. If they win, they'll kind of be moving up through the loser's bracket. It's a double elimination tournament. And so there's some hope that they could kind of rally and come back. It's just super hard, apparently, to win from the loser's bracket. So I don't have a lot of hope. I think I've probably got one more game with them, and we'll enjoy it. I mean, I've always hated baseball.
Mm-hmm.
And this team is the kind of team that's a pretty good gateway into the sport. So I've enjoyed it.
That shocks me.
Yeah, man. It's just strange days. You know, I haven't watched a bounce of the NBA since right after the All-Star break.
I've been watching the playoffs some with Caden, my oldest.
I feel the same way about them that I do Disney. I'm just not going to feed them. I'm not going to feed them revenue in any way, including letting their advertisers see that people are watching their sport. I'm just done with it. And that was a big vacuum in our family life. And so Tennessee baseball helped.
It's cool.
Anything else you're watching?
I watched a couple movies last night. I watched a scary movie called Splinter.
Okay.
Have you seen that?
Mm-mm.
I was just on Prime and, you know, the popular movies at the time, and there were a couple I hadn't seen. So it's kind of a B scary movie.
Uh-huh.
But it reminded me, you know, like a poor man's The Thing.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of like that. And by poor man's, I mean like an impoverished man's.
Yeah. Yeah.
But it's those kind of special effects.
Yeah.
It's kind of a similar concept. But it's like a rural gas station instead of in the Antarctica or whatever.
Okay.
So
somebody kind of riffing on the Thing idea?
Possibly, but it was back from 2008, I think.
Oh.
Something like that. Okay. So it's got an actor in it. I can't remember his name, but you'll recognize him when you see him.
Okay.
But, you know, there's language and violence. You know, it may violate somebody's conscience, but there's not any sexuality in it that I'm aware of.
Yeah.
So I saw that, and it was, I mean, it's, you know, if you don't have anything to watch, it's worth taking the time to watch it. It got like a 6 on IMDb.
Okay.
And so I would say it's a 6, you know.
Yeah.
So, and I watched another movie, something, Baytown Outlaws.
Hmm.
Have you ever seen that?
That sounds familiar, but I don't know why.
Similar, it was just on the popular, and it's ridiculous, but it's got like, and it's got a lot of bad language in it. I don't believe there's any sexuality in it that I'm aware of. But it has the guy on the Vikings in it.
Uh-huh.
And there was another guy I recognized. And it's got the Longoria girl.
Ava Longoria?
Eva? Is it Eva?
Yeah, one of those.
And Billy Bob Thornton's in it.
Hmm.
And so when I saw Billy Bob and the other guy in it, I thought, well, I'll see what this is. And it, you know, it's another one that it's kind of, you know, if you don't have anything else to watch, it's kind of worth seeing. It's kind of a redemptive type story.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's just a shoot 'em up type, you know, if you like, kind of like Boondock Saints and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But it got a 6 as well. But other than that, I haven't been watching a whole lot of stuff. I've been going back to old stuff if I'm watching anything.
Yeah, we're kind of in a tough spot on that front too, because there's not a large scale content distribution platform that I'm willing to give any money to anymore. You know, we canceled Netflix over the cuties thing. They've done nothing but get worse since then. Amazon is ran by, you know, the guys who canceled Ryan Anderson's book and won't sell, I think, Abigail Schreier's maybe on, you know, transgenderism. And like,
it's crazy.
I'm just not going to give them money. So I called to cancel my Prime account. It's, you know, I bought a year at a time. So it expires in November, but I'm just not using their stuff. And you don't know, my kid's like, hey, can we go watch a new movie? And I'm like, I don't know where to find a new movie. You know, I can find a Redbox. Redbox appears to be trying to move to streaming, you know, pretty aggressively too.
I rarely see anybody at a Redbox anymore.
Yeah, exactly. And again, this is how successful these monthly subscription models. Netflix really was ahead of the game on all of this. They just became monsters.
Yeah.
And so we still have the HBO one, which is full of, you know, garbage too. It'll eventually go. I want to watch that new Conjuring movie on it before I get rid of it. But
it's good, by the way. I did watch that.
Yeah, I mean, our plan
it's
is
really good.
Our plan is to review it on the coming episode, right?
But, yeah.
This is kind of a corollary for the tough spot we're in. It seems like the world decided to become super maniacal all at once, and so
the new Conjuring's an exception to that.
Yeah,
like it's
well, and this film we're talking about today
positive towards Christianity, at least towards broad Christianity.
Yeah, it's kind of built into the material. I just wonder. I mean, I don't think that's going to last much longer. I don't know if a movie like that gets made if it's not already a franchise.
Mm-hmm.
Again, based on what I've heard coming out of Disney, I mean, they're self-consciously opposing that stuff, right? And mm-hmm. promoting these other things. And so all of a sudden, my family went from loving films to being cut off from Netflix, Disney, and Amazon Prime. You know, it has been an abrasive kind of crash for us. And I don't think this is like a temporary lull. I'm not sure if any of our listeners think that the world will stabilize and things will get better. It's not that bad. I don't think that's the case. I think we're accelerating. And so I may be a nut, and I hope I'm wrong, and I'll be delighted to be on here saying, boy, wasn't that crazy? But these legacy media companies are not our friends, and you know, God bless you if you want to give them your money, but they're going to try to propagandize your kids. PBS, which obviously PBS was on the, you know, on the politically left side of the spectrum for a long time. But again, it's all radically sexualizing children, you know. Blue's Clues now is pushing drag queens. I mean, it's just
that's
whole world
insane.
Went super crazy, super fast. I think we all kind of thought there was a current that was pulling us in that direction, but we might have a year or two. Nope, it just hit all at once. And here we are. We got to be faithful in the midst of it. Story's disciple. And unless you want, you know, to bring in someone to disciple your children in an ideology that hates you and wants to destroy you, your family, your faith, you probably ought to close the door to those disciplers, you know, as best you're able. So, that's probably a pretty good time to put a bow on it. Do you have anything for So Sorry to Interrupt?
Unless you want to talk about the SBC.
I do want to, but let's save that. Maybe we'll do that on a sister podcast.
Okay.
Well, with that in mind, then, let's jump into A Quiet Place 2. There's no subtitle on A Quiet Place 2, is there?
I don't think so. Mm-mm.
Yeah, I don't either. We were both quite impressed by that, right? We both came away with a very positive impression of this movie. Does that sound right?
Oh, yeah. I took my whole family to see this movie. I let my 6-year-old, my 8-year-old, 12-year-old, 13-year-old, we all watched the original one. And we don't let them watch scary movies usually. Especially the younger ones. But for this one, we made an exception because it's such a good story. The first one was very pro-father, pro-husband, pro-sacrificial love. I mean, just a very positive look of Judeo-Christianity. Not only that, but traditional nuclear family. And this movie is in favor of the nuclear family as well. And it has a story of redemption. And I mean, it's just a really good story.
Yeah, I agree. Let me ask you a question. I would kind of like to show my kids A Quiet Place, but, you know, my wife thinks I'm setting them up for tons of nightmares and whatnot. So your youngest is how old?
6.
How'd the 6-year-old handle the first one?
They all did well with him.
Yeah.
They all did well with him. And I think it's just because I mean, I say they did well. you know, he gets scared sometimes, but not at night usually. He's so exhausted. He'll be falling asleep on the couch. We're to wake him up to get him upstairs, you know. So he sleeps well. He sleeps by himself in a room, and he does fine.
Yeah.
The others have done well with this movie, but I did let him see Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark, which...
That's a lot, man.
Yeah.
That's a lot.
That was worse than I thought. So that was a mistake, and that kept two or three of them up that night. Yeah. So
now we've more than dipped our toes in, but it's stuff like Are You Afraid of the Dark?
Yeah.
They've not watched really intense stuff. Well, let's get into this movie, and we'll start with a spoiler warning. I'm about to read the summary from IMDb, and once we get done with that summary, listener, we will be in full-blown spoiler territory. We'll assume that you want to hear details of the movie in our review. So if that's not you, hit pause now. Go watch the film. Come back and talk to us when you're done. So Jared, IMDb says, following the events at home, which is a reference to the original Quiet Place, the Abbott family now face the terrors of the outside world. Forced to venture into the unknown, they realize the creatures that hunt by sound are not the only threats lurking beyond the sand path.
That's a good synopsis.
I thought it was too. Good job, IMDb. So a lot of what we love about the first movie is queued up and continued here, right? So when we think about creation, this is a movie that affirms the goodness of the natural law. The family's a good thing. The nuclear family's a good thing. Parents love their kids. Kids have conflict with their parents, but it's still in the context of a loving environment. This is the natural world just invaded by, you know, entities that don't exist in our world that hunt and kill. So most everything else functions the way the laws of physics do in their world and whatnot. Anything in the creational construction of this movie you want to highlight?
No.
Yeah. Fallenness, again, sort of easy, I think, in my mind, to square up with the Christian worldview. Parents and kids don't always get along. There's conflict within the home. Authority is not always delighted in, basically. Mm-hmm. I mean, the authority that's presented in this movie is wonderful. Mm-hmm. There's not a lot to criticize, but it's not delighted in.
Emmett is shown as evil at the beginning, not kind of jaded, where he's lost his family, so he doesn't want to take on any responsibility towards his neighbor, but that's put in a light as obviously this is a wicked reaction, and she, what's her name? Do you remember her name?
Evelyn.
Evelyn rebukes him and pleads with him to protect Reagan, and not only that, but later on, Emmett, he goes and he helps Reagan, but I don't know if it's cannibals. Is it cannibals that eventually come upon them?
Yeah, so they go to the boat docks, and these degenerated humans set upon them. You know, my wife watched it with us, and she said that those are pretty good pirates. You know, that's the more actual gruesome version of a pirate.
Yeah, good call.
Cannibal pirates.
Yeah, cannibal pirates come upon them, and then Emmett, you know, mans up and takes care. Actually, he was trying to help a little girl. It's the reason why he got caught.
Mm-hmm.
And but he saves Reagan, and then Reagan saves him. And I thought it was really well done that evil is clearly presented as evil and good as, like, they're not trying to persuade you to, oh, you're in a difficult situation, so you're going to start acting evil, which is kind of, I think that's kind of where The Walking Dead eventually got to, where you had, you know, there was a clear good for so many seasons. But then it starts getting kind of mushy or wishy-washy towards once Rick's gone.
Like situational ethics?
Yeah, situational where, oh, if you were putting in this situation, now you can't tell who's good, who's evil type thing.
Yeah, which is a major project of advanced modern storytelling, right?
Yeah.
I first ran into that with The Wicked Play, but apparently that Cruella movie that Emma Stone is in is just basically, Cruella was mistreated, so that's why and that's all supposed to justify, you know,
that she's a moral monster.
That she's a moral monster.
She's a psycho.
Somebody else was mean, so she gets to be mean. The moral confusion, it's hard to even call it confusion. It's what you would expect when God's revelation is rejected, when evil is called good and good is called evil.
Mm-hmm.
That they can't have an internally consistent ethic.
Yeah, and in the Bible, victims have a moral responsibility to God. They don't get to just do whatever they want. The Bible goes out of its way to say that when Jesus, when he was reviled, he did not revile in return.
Mm-hmm.
Now, like, if it would have been sin for Jesus to revile in return, you better believe it's sin for us.
I mean, the Bible even forbids us to, like, rejoice over the fall of our enemies.
Yeah.
There is a real obligation to be upright in your victimhood.
Yeah.
And that is not what's running the world right now.
Not
that perspective
at all.
Doesn't have any traction. So, yeah, I was so afraid of so much of that with this movie. I was afraid that, you know, this would be sort of a moral inversion, that mm-hmm. all of a sudden, you know, the Abbots are going to be wicked people because they were put in hard circumstances.
Mm-hmm.
I was also afraid that this was going to be one of those simplistic tropes of, you know, it's time to empower women. And so the way we'll make women empowered is just have them do all the stuff the guys do.
Yep.
Which there is a lot of that with Reagan. If I have a criticism of this movie is that it kind of pushes in that direction. I think, though, they do a good job of sort of stopping it before it gets too far. It is a natural outgrowth of what her character was in the first one. This isn't a betrayal. And then they also kind of, they treat her as a young woman, not as a woman who is just as good as a man in all the ways we traditionally think of male characteristics.
Mm-hmm.
At one point, a creature gets the jump on her, right? And scandalously, the male shows up to save her. Now, she does at the end kind of get, she ends up saving him, right? But even with those cannibal pirates, I thought it was interesting that the movie, without sexualizing her, put her in a sexually vulnerable situation the way you would be as a young woman in the clutches of evil men.
Mm-hmm.
I think he pulls her jacket off or something and exposes her shoulders when he had the evil pirate guy, when he has her in his clutches. And it was just really well done. It was saying everything that needed to be said without
mm-hmm.
saying more than needed to be or showing more than needed to be.
Yeah.
You got everything you needed to know. And she clearly was there as someone who wasn't going to be able to overpower this guy.
Right. And essentially, I mean, throughout human history, if you're going to fight evil men, you need good men to do it.
Right.
And this movie recognized that. Emmett stepped up and he goes, that's one of my favorite parts of the movie.
Because yeah.
he just, it's really well done. It's just like Lee would have done, you know, in the old one.
Yes.
Her daddy.
Yes.
And it was really good. And then her saving him, though, was... It wasn't unrealistic, or
right.
it wasn't her. All of a sudden, she whips four men, you know,
right.
like right. a ninja.
Right. You know, the little brother, his arc is consistent. Now, again, if you look at it objectively, I do think there is a bit of confusion in that the brother ends up kind of consigned to the domestic realm, and the sister is out pressing forward. But I found it much more palatable as sort of a, they kind of show that these are the circumstances and they lend themselves to the personality type.
Mm-hmm.
And they're kind of counterbalanced by this is the family culture, this is who these guys are, and they can't do this alone. They need help. You know, Evelyn is clearly appealing to Emmett. We have to have a father kind of figure. You know, she doesn't use those words.
Right.
But we need more. We need some kind of stand-in for Lee.
Well, and a preteen male, too, oftentimes is, you know...
retiring and...
Well, this kid nails it. I mean, he's very, you know, from a boy to a man, he needs to man up. And I think he eventually does, but, you know, he's obviously not ready to go out. But the way... I love the way they, both with the girl and with the boy... their desire to break away from their parents is very clear. Like, go out exploring, go out. I mean, that's teens, man.
Yeah.
I mean, that's how we were when we were mm-hmm. kids. We're lucky we made it. You know, the Lord watched out for us.
Right. And so let's get into redemption here, because that's maybe my favorite part. And what I thought was so faithful to the original movie is sort of this idea of carrying on the family as it's handed on to the next generation. And they kind of got together in this. But before we do that, we'll talk about redemption. And so Emmett's really the redemptive character here, right?
Yeah.
You want to kind of sketch that out for us?
Yeah, he lost his family, evidently. Evidently, his wife got really sick, and he had her there near him in a bed. And she evidently died, but was screaming, causing...
She was in a lot of pain.
A lot of pain. And she ended up dying. But he did not want to have to care for anyone else because he... I guess that excuse, you know, I'm a failure. If you're with me, you're going to be harmed type thing is what it seemed to be. Mm-hmm. But whenever Evelyn pleaded with him to go save Reagan because she's a good woman, essentially what she argued, he mans up and goes and does it. And he does save her life. And not only that, but he saves her on multiple occasions. And she ends up being the hero of the movie again, which is fine. But he puts her in a position to do so. And not only that, but there's an emphasis on her dad, mm-hmm. who's not in the story. There's an emphasis on him being a good father and her essentially applying what he taught her. And so it's still echoing that from the first movie that fathers are super important. And this one, you know, it's not only fathers, but men and women are important. Like there's these, you know, these essential roles and responsibilities. And in difficult situations, sometimes they're not as clear cut. But like Jeff said, a man comes and saves the day at various times, which, you know, that doesn't often happen.
I would love to know what the Krasinski's religious and philosophical background is, because they clearly get these things and aren't embarrassed by them. I think they might be made to be embarrassed of them at some point, you know. But yeah, you're right that Emmett steps in to kind of carry on Lee's legacy as a more than a stopgap, but a stopgap. But that Lee has so influenced his daughter that she's carrying on his, you know, his vision. And I appreciate that in so many different ways. I appreciate that a guy who has failed, right? And or at least feels he has. He might have been put in circumstances he could not have succeeded in, but he feels like he's failed. He finds redemption in giving himself afresh to a good endeavor. Mm-hmm. I love that. I love the way that he models the way that, I mean, particularly in the church, that other men can help step in to, you know, work with a young man if his dad's a checkout or a loser or dead or whatever it might be, right? Other men can do that. The church can do that. Other men in, you know, in the neighborhood, at least in tight-knit communities that aren't constantly being reshuffled by people traveling for jobs and whatnot, that there is a role for other men to say, look, I'll show you how to change oil. I'll show you what it's like to, I'll show you how to treat my wife, and you'll learn how to treat women in seeing that. And so I love that part about it. I love mm-hmm. the way Lee's legacy carries on. I'm just so enthusiastic about that.
Mm-hmm.
What about glorification? What would you say this movie says about a better world?
I mean, it's just families coming together, essentially, right?
Yeah.
To and not just families, but communities are strengthened whenever they're strong families, you know?
Sure, and they work together.
Yeah, they work together, yeah.
Yeah, the thing that I thought was really brilliant about this one, Krasinski famously said that they made the first movie to say to their kids, this is how much we love you.
Mm.
You know, I've not heard that clip or quip from him for A Quiet Place 2, but they really captured the essential drama and terror for a parent in this movie, right? I mean, we need to launch our children. Our homes are supposed to be nurturing, but they're nurturing toward a end. They're nurturing to make strong so that the child can depart from our home and create their own family, right? And face the world full of its hostilities.
Mm-hmm.
And a parent that loves their child is going to want to do that, but is also going to face a ton of trepidation when they look at their child facing the threats that exist in the world we live in, right?
Mm-hmm.
I think every generation thinks, good night, I don't want my kids living in this world. And sometimes the previous generation is wrong, right? That they, you know, they become too skeptical or whatever. But history is full of parents who had to send their kids out into a world. I mean, if we look at our brothers and sisters in Africa now, there's parents there raising their children who know that at the next raid or when they become adults and they take over, you know, pastoring a church, the next raid, the next hostilities could cost their kids their lives, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you have this fear of what will become of this precious child when I send it out into the world. And this movie shows that they're going to have to face those threats. Parents have to eventually, maybe not by letting the kids sneak out and go on a crazy solo mission, but kids are going to have to eventually take the reins and try to lead the family into the next generation. And this movie captures that super well. It, you know, kids need their parents to strengthen them. Kids need their parents to launch them and support them as they're trying to figure it out.
Mm-hmm.
And eventually, kids are going to have to be the ones who carry the vision of the family and the character of the family forward. And I just thought it was super well done putting that there. Again, okay. I'd quibble with a couple of things. You know, I would help the boy to find his bravery moment maybe more out in the world than in the bunker. But, you know, considering particularly the way we talked, you know, how we started talking about Disney and whatnot at the beginning of this episode, I'll take the problems in this film every day of the week and ask for more, please.
But yeah, like with the boy, though, like him protecting, you know, sibling, that's going to be his role, though. Like, you know?
Yeah.
So I thought that was fine. I thought that was good. And as scared as he was, he still manned up. He didn't abandon the kid. He didn't run away. I thought that was good. The plot hole that I saw was just with the aliens, because you get a glimpse of the ships, you know, and those aliens ain't flying no ships,
right?
Like I wonder if Krasinski, from what I understand, doesn't want to do part three. But dude, I think they left it open enough where these could be like the kind of like the dogs, and there's more intellectual like aliens that are over them.
Sure, they use these creatures to scour a world they want to take.
Yeah, because there has to be someone flying those ships and building those ships, and it can't just be meteors that are hitting.
Yeah, you know, we talked earlier about comic books and what went crazy. I think that, you remember Doomsday, the creature who killed Superman?
Mm-hmm.
I think in the comics lore that he was deployed that way, that you would drop this Doomsday creature on a planet and let it destroy the planet, and then it's, you know, fresh to take over.
Okay, that's cool. Yeah. And that's Superman too, I guess. The Krypton, the Kryptonian machine they put at one end of Earth and the other one at the other end. And it turns to terraform
the planet.
Yeah, it turns it into Krypton.
Yeah.
I was watching yesterday the first Superman movie.
So the marauding advance force that destroys everything to allow the conquerors to come in, can we call these sound-based creatures Antifa?
Oh, there you go, yeah.
Let's call them the Antifa creatures.
We'll call them critical theory.
I'm laughing so I don't cry. All right, man. So we've kind of went through the worldview analysis there. We hit a couple of our questions too. I think we've done a good job with what's the story. Is there anything you would want to add to sort of fleshing out the story of this movie?
I don't think so. It's just a really good movie that I think you can take most of the family to go see, unless your kids are just terrified of scary movies. I just think it's unrealistic enough to, and I think that's why my kids aren't that scared. You know, there's not a ton of jump scares, and it's CGI. It's good CGI, but you know, it's, I don't know. It worked well with them. They haven't had any issues. I wouldn't dare show them it. They won't see that until they're like 18 if they want to watch it.
Right. Well, Mike Duran, friend of the podcast, was on Twitter, and he criticized A Quiet Place 2 for having too many jump scares. But I'm with you. Too many jump scares feels cheap and cheesy, and it's a way to manufacture frights. The biggest jump scare in this movie to me was before the film started, because, you know, they dim the theater lights and they widen the curtain and everything is nice and quiet and dark and you're waiting for the movie to begin. And they led with a promo video from John Krasinski, and he's like, "Hey," and I jumped back. I was like, "What? What are you doing, John?" So yeah, I thought those scares were well managed. Mike's a brilliant storyteller in his own right, but I didn't buy that criticism. We would ask, where am I, seeing the style and shape of the world? Again, I feel like we've covered quite a bit of this, but is there anything that we haven't highlighted on what it's like to kind of live in this world for a while?
Yeah, I don't know if I fit anywhere in here. Hopefully I'm Emmett after he comes around, you know, ready to fight. I don't want to be like him, though, at the beginning when he's essentially a coward.
Yeah, I mean, he had good reason to be, right? I mean, his family had been destroyed and he couldn't protect them. You don't want to be Lee either. I mean,
yeah, but a woman with a baby and
two
kids in tow that you personally know, and you're gonna just leave her. I mean,
see, that's true. I think that's, you know, the movie itself is not distorted evil and false,
right?
But that inclination in hard circumstances is distorted evil and false. So let's put a pin there.
Sure.
I'll tell you where I am in that, man. I'm older than I've ever been, and my kids are too. And, you know, I said earlier that sometimes the current generation or the aging generation can be wrong, that the world really hasn't gotten that much worse and their kids are going to be fine. But I'm not someone who thinks society is in a good place. I think we are living through a revolutionary moment. I think certain important things to human dignity and human thriving are being attacked and being replaced. I think, you know, racism, a neo-racism through critical theory is ascendant. I think there is a culturally destructive force that's loose in society and controlling many of our institutions that think they can destroy culture and then build back a better one, which never happens, right? You know, if it's ISIS or the Cuban Revolution, what comes after is not better than what was destroyed, even though that's what they sell their destructive violence in, right? It'll be better. This will all be justified because the better world we're creating will be there. They're never able to deliver, but they are able to keep pouring on more violence. I think Christianity is under assault, and it could be that the Lord is judging the West and removing the lampstand. And so I look at this movie, and I feel a lot of the trepidation that I think Evelyn would feel, you know. And someday I am going to be Lee. Lord willing, I'll be dead, and my kids will be living on facing this stuff. And so I hope I'm not defined by fear, but fear is certainly an element I fear. And I was able to relate to a family that's trying to think through, we have what the world needs. We have Christianity. We have the worldview that it constructs. We have the values it cultivates. We have what the world needs. But I'm not sure I want my daughter carrying it out into a world full of monsters, particularly if I'm not around to take the hit, you know? And so it was very easy for me to sit there. I mean, I'm the kind of guy who would like to build a bunker. Even as I know that we have to carry the gospel forward.
Amen. That's a great analogy. Think of that earpiece as the gospel, and you got to get it out to answer the world, to fight the evil and destroy it. And it's not critical theory.
No.
Not going to help anybody.
No, the poison is not the antidote. So good, true, and awesome here. Where do we see grace? I mean, man, it's just all over that family.
Yeah, all over that family. Every main character, that whole family is good, true, and awesome. From the boy to the daughter to the mother to Emmett. And even the man on the island, they didn't even name him. The man on the island was a good man.
And that had a little community. Yeah.
That whole community and them seeking to save the kids and having a plan, like when everything went down, to protect and to encourage.
And even the man on the island, you know, he dies, but his last sentence, I think, is, I've got to get back to my family.
Yeah, and even the plan, like, how crazy is it of a plan to, I'm going to get in this hot rod car, and I'm going to beep the horn, and so
to lead them away.
So the monsters are going to chase me, and it's just... I was like, what in the world are they doing? Because that's a crazy scene.
Very self-sacrificial, though, right?
Oh, yeah. That's the right way to be.
I think Christians can look at this movie and say, well, yeah, it's sort of living off the capital of Christianity, and that's true. Like, everything that's good about this movie is ultimately going to be grounded in Christianity or it's nonsense, right? Mm-hmm. It couldn't be sustained in and of itself. It has to have Christianity undergirding it. Every bit of that's true, but the way I would encourage a Christian to think about this movie and talk about this movie is that this is a movie that shows you the strength of the natural law.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we have the natural law built into our conscience, built into the world around us. It is clarified and given to us most fully in special revelation. But special revelation is consistent with natural law.
Mm-hmm.
And this is a world built on the good that is available, even in a fallen world, because God is gracious to give us natural law.
Mm-hmm.
Parents matter. Families matter. Self-sacrifice is one of the right ways forward in a world full of fallen and evil things, right?
Mm-hmm.
This is all stuff that you can find in the natural law. And, you know, we talked about Jordan Peterson earlier. I was talking to a young man who's an apologist, and in his ethics class, they were discussing natural law, and the professor had said that natural law really can't be an apologetic. But I actually think the natural law may be increasingly an apologetic in our day.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Jordan Peterson has made his brand by telling people you don't have to live in chaos. You can live with order, right?
Mm-hmm.
And he's clearly not a Christian. What Jordan Peterson gets right is where he gets closest to the natural law. And I think the church can say apologetically in a similar fashion, you don't have to live chaotically.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, we can teach you about the natural law, you know, what Bujaszewski called what you can't not know, right? You already sense these things. You can see with your own eyes and feel discomfort with how opposing these things brings chaos.
Mm-hmm.
Let's show you Let's show you why there's a natural law, how living consistently with it tends to work in the Proverbs sense, work more productively for you. But then what's it pointing you to? It's pointing you to this gospel that's above and beyond even the natural law. And so when I think about what's good, true, and awesome here, I'm going to say, like, you know, with the first movie I said, that's the most complementarian movie ever made. I may now call it the most patriarchal movie ever made.
Mm-hmm.
With this one, I'm going to call it the most natural law affirming movie.
Hmm.
That's the frame I'm going to put on it.
Okay.
What's distorted, evil, and false here?
Nothing that I'm aware of, because everything is framed rightly, right? There's a clear good, clear evil. Even when the good men are evil, it's shown as evil. Mm-hmm. And then he's brought back. He's redeemed. There's forgiveness. There's nothing wrong in this movie that I think.
There's themes that it pulls from a fallen world that are in and of themselves distorted, evil, and false, but they're presented accurately,
right?
And they're cast in the right light. So Emmett's cowardice is realistic,
mm-hmm.
and it doesn't take the fall of society to bring that out. There's just a lot of guys out there who want to sit on a video game system,
mm-hmm.
and let their kids be eaten alive or whatever, you know. So that's presented for what it is, as a dereliction of duty that's shameful, even if we're sympathetic to, like, this guy took a big loss. But then the degenerated humans who are the pirates, you know, who seize upon them, if you live as a natural person, you live contrary to the natural law, you live contrary to God's revelation of himself, it dehumanizes you.
Mm-hmm.
These people were clearly dehumanized, and they were dehumanizing. Even the way they used a little girl as bait, it's clearly dehumanizing. And it's presented that way in the film. And so I'm with you. I'm just super enthusiastic about the moral, I don't want to say framing, like the moral weave of this film.
Yeah, I hope Krasinski continues to direct and be involved in good storytelling. I'm optimistic about, like you mentioned, The Mandalorian. I'm optimistic about Favreau's next project, which I think is a Star Wars spinoff again.
Yeah.
And so I'm hoping that those guys continue, you know, telling good stories that, you know, instead of being bankrupt.
Yeah, or driven from society. The thing that worries me about Krasinski, and maybe he can thread this needle, but the way Pratt has been attacked makes me think that unless Krasinski starts working on explicitly culturally maniacal projects, he'll eventually be seen as, you know, part of the problem.
Did you see 13 Hours with Krasinski?
No.
It's worth watching, but it's like a spit in the face to the U.S. government.
Really?
Because it's about Benghazi.
Oh, okay.
And that, just how the government failed. And so he went from that to A Quiet Place, and then, you know, he's also in that Amazon, it's not Jack Reacher.
I wonder what you're talking about, the Tom Clancy films.
Yeah, Tom Clancy.
It's not Jack Reacher, that's right. I can't remember that guy's name.
Jack Ryan.
There you go.
But it's I don't think it's woke. I'm not sure what the word, but it's definitely liberal in its arguments.
Yeah.
So I don't know. He's participating in that and doing well, but then when he's writing, he's doing the opposite of that. So
I mean, at some point, as a white male, he's going to have to debase himself and renounce himself and say, "I'm a white male of privilege, and you know, I'm blocking access to voices of color or marginalized groups." I mean, he's going to have to do that.
Yeah.
If he's going to survive, and I just hope he doesn't. I hope he's like, you know what? I've actually made a gajillion dollars, and I'm just going to ride off into the sunset.
Keep telling good stories.
Oh yeah, I mean, if he's willing to do that. Yeah, more power to him. I'll crowdfund anything he wants to, you know, get involved in.
I think him and his wife are Roman Catholic.
God bless the Roman Catholic Church, man. I mean, they're hard pressed. There's clearly a war among the bishops, and may God grant grace to the true church that is in Rome. Well, on that front, Jared, how does the gospel apply here?
I think what you said earlier about, you know, a good metaphor is, you know, we have what the world needs, and we've got to get it out there. And we don't need to try to keep our children from doing it. We need to train them up to where they can do it well. And, you know, that's what Lee did. The only reason why his daughter's in a position to help the world is because her daddy taught her well. Her mama taught her well. And I think that's a good example for us. We need to teach our kids well to be in the world, not of the world. I think a big thing is beauty, to help them see the beauty in God's creation, help them see the beauty in God's storytelling. I mean, in the Bible, but also in pop culture, the common grace, like helping them see that why they love this is because the fingerprints of God are all over it. Image bearing is all over it. You know, and like this movie, I mean, it's because we long for God. We long for the gospel. We long for redemption. We long for a family where there's safety. We long to conquer evil. I mean, all the things that God gives us in Christ.
Amen, brother. Amen. I am thankful that Lee is presented as a father whose influence remains, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I am mindful, though, that like ultimately what his household and the world of the story John is telling, it can't exist apart from, and it certainly can't be maintained apart from explicit faith in Christ.
Mm-hmm.
And so ultimately for us, Lee is not just dad. Lee is Christ, right? That he, you know, we're not someone who believes in Christ primarily as moral exemplar.
Right.
But he is a moral exemplar. And he is the kind of shepherd who gives his life for the sheep. But he's also not just our exemplar in that sense and our sacrificial atonement in that sense. He causes his spirit to live within us. And so his character is reproduced supernaturally within us. And I'm thankful for that. I'm thankful that it's not just merely that I'm looking to a good father who gave me a good example, although those things are to be praised and to be sought by people like you and I, but that his spirit lives within me and gives me what I cannot have merely through example.
Mm-hmm.
And just to close out, just because you mentioned it, if anybody cares who's listening to this, I think the best thing a parent can do is to shape their child's world in such a way that the beauty of what God has built into society is seen, or built into the world is seen. We don't want to just talk about like, oh, you know, we need more babies because the birth rate is declining, or to even take a neutral position and let our kids decide whether or not they want kids.
Mm-hmm.
We need to cultivate a high view of marriage. You know, in fifth and sixth grade, well, what do you think it'll be like when you're married?
Yeah.
How many children do you want?
Yep.
A high view of the beauty of family and the blessing, the unique blessing that God gives families through children. Those kind of things have to be in every way we can creatively design to be presented to our children as lovely. Because you can give them the data.
Mm-hmm.
You can give them the data that God judges these kind of things. You can give them the data that, you know, if you rebel against this, God's judgment will come. It'll come in the form of like supernatural disaster. It'll also come in natural disaster, like sexually transmitted diseases and societal ills. But I think more powerfully, and where I think maybe the church is losing the battle a bit, is that we haven't put a lot of effort into showing our kids that these things are lovely, that they're to be adored, and they are adorable, right?
Mm-hmm. Same way with gender, same way with it's good to be a man, it's good to be a woman.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
I mean, celebrating those things, enjoying those things. I'm glad that the Lord made you this way.
Setting them in good contrast.
Yeah.
I'll never have the joy of growing a child within me.
Mm-hmm.
My wife will have that joy.
Mm-hmm.
My son will not have that joy, but he will have the joy of loving one woman well and raising children.
Mm-hmm.
for his entire life.
Yeah.
And that is not something available to a wife. A wife is not a husband, and a husband is not a wife. And
right.
Though, you know, by framing those things through negation is a good thing too, because it helps you see the distinctive loveliness in a world that wants to say women are not special or powerful unless they're just basically doing what we always expected men to do.
Yeah.
My daughter needs to know that she's made lovely in a way my sons will never be made lovely.
Right.
My sons have been made strong in a way my daughter will never be made strong.
Right.
And these are good gifts that God gave them. And so the high view and the loveliness of these things, I think we got to spend more time on.
Amen.
Which this movie does a good job. This pair of movies does a great job of doing.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. All right, man. Anything else?
That's it, buddy.
All right. Well, where can people find you out there in the broader world, Mr. Moore?
You can find me on Twitter at Jared H. Moore. You can find my book, The Pop Culture Parent, on Amazon or wherever you buy your books. I've also got another book on lust that will probably come out at the end of this year through Free Grace Press that I'm working on. And Jeff and I have another project that we hope to get done by the end of this year. but it might be next year before we get that out. But anyway, be sure to check out our other episodes, and I appreciate it.
Yeah. So I am tentatively back on Twitter at merely J Wright, and love to connect with any of our listeners there. The podcast is at PCCDPod on most every platform. We are on, we spend less time on different ones. So we're on Twitter, we're on Gab, we're on Instagram, we're on Facebook. You can try to keep up with us on pretty much any of those. Instagram probably gets the least amount of love, but the other ones are all fairly active. All right. Well, listeners, thanks for tuning in again, and we appreciate y'all. Thank you for giving us a chance to talk to you about these films that maybe are getting more rare, but which show us the glory of God. And so for Dr. Jared Moore, I am Jeff Wright, reminding you to live every moment as if you are before the face of God.
Because you are.
We'll talk to y'all next time.